Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm Dan.
And I'm Alex.
And bienvenue à Paris. Welcome back to On Air.
Welcome, welcome. We are joining you together in person, live from Paris.
This is a weird one because we're sitting in a conference room at a hotel across the table from each other, not just like across, like the person across from you, but opposite ends of the table.
Did you ever see that time where Macron went to visit Putin during yes. COVID and Putin made him sit at the far end of this really long conference table? That is us now.
Yeah, literally. And it's also, it's 10 p.m. on Wednesday, so we're recording this very late.
Yeah.
Our plan was, so we didn't really think this through, because this week, ironically, we both had time to record.
We did.
Out of all weeks.
We could have recorded, as we usually do, kind of like late on the Tuesday, so that we're nice and current for you guys on Wednesday. Some episodes, we come to you from Monday night. That would be as earliest as we do it. Nope, we didn't do that because we both knew that we were going to be seeing each other in Paris this Wednesday. And then it gets to 10 p.m. now and we're like, oh, like, there is no episode yet. We haven't yet recorded. And we've known all day we have to record, but the day has just flown. And this is what happens European summer. It's daylight until forever. So you constantly think it's 4 o'clock.
Yeah.
And then you're just shocked.
So this is going to be, since it's a bit late, we really want to get an episode out. We had a nice expression for what this episode is. Do you want to tell us?
We said that imagine On Air as Lufthansa, right? I mean, of course, Lufthansa could never, okay, right? But imagine On Air as Lufthansa, and every week we're delivering you a Lufthansa, an actual Lufthansa episode in terms of the full legacy carrier that is Lufthansa. Well, this episode is going to be the express version. So this is more of a Lufthansa City Line episode, right? Something kind of short, sharp, sweeter. It's still us. Your ticket number is still On Air. You're still arriving to the same On Air check-in, whether that's Spotify or Apple, wherever you get your podcast.
You still earn points.
You still definitely earn points. And we still climb the ranks with you. It's just going to be a little bit of a faster episode than usual, but we promise to make it up for you in the future.
Yeah. So today we've had a fun day in Paris. I flew in on Air France, which I'm going to tell you all about. Alex flew in. I mean, you guys can guess how he flew in. It's not exactly a surprise.
Well, there's only one way to fly in from Doha, really. I mean, how else do you get from Doha to Paris without it being QR?
Well, the irony is that 2 days ago, you weren't in Doha, but let's not go into that.
I don't see that. Your Honor, I think that's out of the scope of our case.
Okay.
Objection.
Regardless, we are here for something very different.
Yeah.
And we've both come together in Paris because this is like this is something we could never do. This is an opportunity we've never had before, this type of thing. We are going to the cabin crew uniform, or as CEO Tony Douglas says, fashion reveal of Riyadh Air tomorrow. So,
Riyadh Air, of course, the newcomer to the Saudi market, the airline that doesn't physically exist yet, but will be flying next summer. They have partnered with a fashion house based here in Paris. It is Paris Fashion Week right now. We have seen celebs and models everywhere. We're kind of walking on the pavements, navigating our way through Mercedes V-classes and photographers waiting for whoever is inside the Ritz in Place Vendôme and so on. And Riyadh Air is a customer partnering with one of the fashion houses here. The brand is Ashi.
Oh, the brand is Riyadh.
The brand is always Riyadh, isn't it? But yeah. I guess today the brand is Riyadh and Ashi. And that's a Saudi brand that's based here in Paris. And they are the fashion house that will be delivering what is the new uniforms for Riyadh Air's male and female flight attendants when the airline goes live in around a year.
Yeah, I'm excited because obviously there are no expenses spared for this type of thing. So we think the event will be pretty cool. Obviously, I did a poll on my YouTube channel asking whether I should go. Of course, Alex was like, duh, come. But everyone, 90% of the poll responded yes.
I didn't know you did a poll.
Yeah, I did because I was so torn. So now I feel validated. Like last week or two weeks ago.
Oh, okay. I've been really in a relaxed place over the last 2 weeks. Yeah. We don't
so need to go to the vote in my poll. You voted no in my
poll. I didn't
poll.
Even see the poll. It's the first. I've been super trying to genuinely. I've been very, very relaxed for the first time in a long time, which has been good. It was a proper vacation-y switch off thing. So I missed your poll, but that's interesting.
Yeah. So I feel good about being here. We have some fun news, of course, this week as well. Speaking of Lufthansa and Lufthansa CityLine, I don't know if this is fun news, but Lufthansa has announced that they will be introducing an environmental tax or an environmental surcharge on their tickets. And this surcharge will vary based on factors like what is your cabin class? Are you economy? Are you business? Do you have the amount of the different surcharges in front of you?
It can be up to 70, 75 euros for a premium cabin ticket that they will be slapping on as extra in order to justify the bonuses of the executive team of Lufthansa. Oh, excuse me. Sorry, I misspoke. In order to justify the climate crisis. I mean, this is not something that when I'm speaking to people in the industry, they are particularly happy with, because I spoke to some executives at airlines that rival the Lufthansa group here in Europe. They said to me that it would have been far more impressive had they have seen this monumental purchase agreement for sustainable aviation fuel, or for example, somewhere that produces SAF that maybe Lufthansa were directly investing into to create a SAF industry, maybe locally in a smaller part or a region in Germany, or maybe they were enhancing a facility that is struggling a bit abroad and they're giving it that investment. Instead, no, it's just this tax in the name of the environment. And I personally, Dan, don't like any of this because obviously, you know, a listener might think, well, of course he doesn't like it. He flies a lot. That's not why I don't like it. I don't like it for the same reason I don't like APD in the UK, the air passenger duty tax, right? Which is that tax for the simple fact of flying. Because that tax, when it was introduced for the UK, was an environmental tax. And so therefore the money that you are giving them in order to adhere to the law and pay that tax was supposed to go to environmental causes that to decarbonize aviation. So maybe into a fund to do with carbon offsets or SAF or whatever. Guess where it goes? Directly to the treasury. That's the government's pot of money. And it forms part of the funds of the current government. It does absolutely nothing for the environment.
Yeah. And that's kind of crazy because at least there it's the government implementing it. But here it's the airline implementing it specifically.
Yeah.
And saying we're going to charge this. In 2023, the 2023 fiscal year, Lufthansa made a profit of 2.5 billion euros.
And they now have the cheek to ask us to be paying even more in the name of... Why are they not reinvesting their profits into some actual actionable, you know, things of substance when it comes to decarbonizing aviation? I'm not saying they haven't done anything. They've done some bits and pieces, but there's nothing there of real significance.
Yeah. By the way, we should highlight this applies to Swiss, Austrian, Brussels Airlines, City Airline, and City Line.
City Airline and City Line.
Yeah, there's, everything.
I'm sure one of them was hoping that the other one would be confused that it was the other. So, it was, you know what I mean? Like, imagine that twins. So one of them gets away with it because they're like the identical twins of the LH group.
Exactly. It just gets lost. So sort of an interesting discussion here is why does an airline add this as a surcharge instead of just adding it as part of the fare? So
yeah,
I've seen a few different, you know, topics of discussion here. My idea is that passengers, there is a lot of talk in Europe, especially Western Europe, about sustainability. And when you're looking at the price details, you see the breakdown of the taxes and surcharges that are not part of the fare. So by displaying it this way, it's kind of like Lufthansa saying, hey, but look, your money is going towards something that you agree with, so you can't feel bad about this. Of course, the surcharge... This is not like a hotel or something where, or Ryanair, where the cost keeps adding up.
No.
It displays in your original fare. But I feel like maybe they've separated it so that it goes toward their profits, but people see it as, oh, but it's something good.
And it's funny because I would say that, you know, Lufthansa were the airline that we were talking about many weeks ago as to being sanctioned by both Europe and the UK for ultimately the BS advertising on how, you know, Lufthansa was the green choice and the sustainable choice and the earth in the palm of the hands and so on. But it's all about money. I would like to see something, at least British Airways, that belongs to the hugely successful and hugely profitable IAG, have invested millions, not just in purchase agreements with SAF, but in actually launching a SAF, sustainable aviation fuel industry in the UK, production, factory, it triggers employment. It creates new jobs, not just regionally, but nationwide. It affects the supply chain of aviation. It creates an industry within an industry, a sustainable aviation sector as part of the wider aviation sector nationally and then internationally. Lufthansa is not doing any of this with this. The group is merely saying, you're going to pay us more because we still want you to keep flying. We know you will continue to keep flying. But when you start umming and ahhing as to why it's now 75 euros more for example, a premium first class ticket, we're going to guilt trip you into letting you know that it's for that planet that you just, you know, recycled your water bottle for.
And I should mention, on the flight yesterday, did I tell you this? On my flight from New York to Paris, I'm trying to get platinum on KLM.
Right.
And by buying SAF, you get status credits.
Right.
So if I completely covered my whole ticket with SAF, I would pay, it was about 900 euros, $890 actually, so a bit less. And that completely covers my whole ticket with SAF.
Right.
And then I also get 64 XPs, which got me over to platinum. So I bought it. I spent $890 to completely SAFify my flight. And that shows
that you, is fascinating.
And that's a business class ticket on a 6-hour flight.
So you paid around $900.
Yeah. For
to compensate the fuel that you as a per passenger burn calculation
in business class
would be burning.
Yeah.
With a sustainable aviation fuel supplier that, I mean, was there information about where that $900 is going?
No. Well, it said this will go toward offsetting this many kilos of carbon emissions through SAF.
But did it tell you about the company that you're giving the money to? Because you're not, assuming you're not giving it to Air France.
Well, it was on Air France's website.
It's facilitated but by supposedly them. They're passing on that cash to a sustainable aviation fuel supplier, producer. Yeah. But there's no information about who that producer
is. That's true. In my mind, I was like, oh, they're just like sort of
buying it in your name.
Many airlines will have a percentage of SAF on
Do you think the finance
nowadays.
Department are like, guys, we've just some got $900 for SAF. Can somebody order some SAF, please? Yeah. And they're like, what's the number for that SAF
they
company
just Uber
again?
Uber Eats some SAF yeah. to JFK.
They're looking on Talabat or Uber Eats. Like, so. Yeah. Okay.
They're just looking at like used cooking oil. Quick.
See, I, you know, when I looked at how airlines were using carbon offsetting, for example, I would specifically, you know, have a lasered focus on which companies they were partnering with, because yeah. some are legit, some are not. Some are, you know, never planting that tree.
Yeah.
Whereas some have the different nature-based solutions
yeah.
as they were known back then. So that's interesting that you went ahead kind of blind.
Well, I did because it was a bonus. I was really buying the XPs because I want to get platinum.
Right.
So I can redeem for La Premiere.
So that's it worked.
That's the thought in the back of my head. And then it's absolutely amazing that I can get a carbon neutral as well, supposedly.
Yeah.
So that's that. And I mean, just one comment I have to make is that at JFK Terminal 1, which is where Air France flies from, you have Lufthansa. And there I am in an Air France A350. And then we have this airline, Lufthansa, introducing environmental tax. Well, they're pulling up with the 747-400, which that's my favorite thing about Lufthansa, that they still fly the 747-400
yeah.
as an av geek. It's yeah. amazing to yeah. be able to see that. But for an airline to come talking about sustainability and then be flying A340-600s, A340-300s in a huge degree, and 747-400s.
It's a little bit questionable.
It's a little bit ironic sure.
It is. Well, there are plenty of other things happening in the aviation world. Before we come to the next thing, I just quickly want to ask you, what was your Air France flight like? You were on the A350?
Yeah.
So this is a new business class cabin.
The new one. They have an old A350 business. I was on a newer A350. I kind of want to wait. If I'm reviewing a flight, I kind of like to wait to share it until my review. But it was very interesting. I have a lot to say about it, as always. Actually, we got a Q&A question, although...
We'll come to that.
Yeah, we'll come to this. But there was a question about Air France.
There was.
That was quite interesting as well.
Was the service Parisian?
Oui, it was very Parisian. Okay, that was oh my God, I'm sorry. That was such a bad accent. But we both said in an earlier episode, we used to speak French. But I feel like now that we're here, realizing our French is so incredibly rusty.
I know. It takes me ages to warm up.
I feel like when I go to a Spanish country, I never learn Spanish, but just from what I picked up from traveling to Spanish countries, I'm more comfortable improvising in Spanish because I'm not supposed to know it than I am in French. And then I become really awkward here speaking with an American accent. And I seem like the biggest
idiot. I try. After a few days, I can get into the groove of it. And then I have the confidence to be speaking in French. But in the beginning, it's just too easy, especially when you're in Paris, because everyone's speaking to you in English.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, it's and I remember I slipped up once in a remote village. I saw a brown Doberman at the time, is when I still had my brown Doberman. And instead of saying, I have a brown Doberman too, I said to him, I am a brown Doberman too.
You do kind of look like, no, I'm kidding.
Wow. Anyway, he looked at me as if to say,
no good French. Yeah. Okay. There's another story here that I find really interesting. This actually came through on a Q&A. We're kind of merging those two today.
Yeah.
This question was from Matt. So he shared a story about, well, I saw this also before, but I'm glad he asked us to talk about it. Two A340s were smuggled by Iran from Lithuania. So there were two A340-300s, I think, but... this article I have here doesn't mention specifically what it was. They were supposed to fly from, so let's see here. One was going to Sri Lanka and the other was going to the Philippines. But suddenly, in the middle of the flight, the planes disappear over Iran. They're using Iranian airspace. So the context here is that it's illegal due to sanctions for Iran to acquire new planes from Airbus
Correct,
or Boeing.
Which we've discussed in depth. And that's ever since that the Iran nuclear deal was ultimately thrown in the trash by Trump replacing the Obama administration. He pulled out of that deal. It meant the sanctions returned. And Iran is stuck until today with the world's most aging, deteriorating fleet of commercial aircraft.
Yeah. So that makes it incredibly difficult for airlines in Iran to grow or to replace aircraft that have somehow not been serviceable. So Iranian airline Mahan Air got creative by we don't know the details, obviously, but there was one A340 that landed at Mehrabad Airport, and the other, they were both flying to these, so Sri Lanka and the Philippines, the other diverted to Konark Airport in the south of Iran. So they divert to two different airports, and suddenly, like that, Mahan Air has the aircraft in their territories. They'll re-register them to Iran and start flying them all over so Alex and I can fly them very soon, hopefully.
Speak for yourself.
No, you're excited.
Look, it's such a complicated one, and it's why you always have to keep such a close eye on politics, or I think it's anyway, geopolitics, because Iran needs aircraft. That hasn't changed. That simple fact hasn't changed. And so it does have to get creative into how it gets these aircraft in. And we also know that Iran is working with China and Russia, specifically Russia. Of course, Iran's friend Russia, a friend by way of also being on the receiving end of sanctions. And so those two are kind of in the same boat there and supporting each other where they can. We know that China seemingly don't have too many issues with either nations in terms of relations and being able to have their aircraft send spare parts, for example, indirectly and so on. It's something that's always, I wonder what we'll see going forward with everything that's happening politically. We've got UK elections in less than 10 days. I don't see there being a big shift or anything related to kind of geopolitics of aviation by the new Labour government that's widely expected to be the new government in the UK. But of course, it will be interesting and perhaps more questions if Trump returns in November.
Yeah.
Or is it happens? Four more years of sleepy, I mean, of Joe Biden?
Hey.
Because that was a joke. That was a joke. I'm a centrist.
So I have to say, it is interesting that Mahan Air seems to be the savage guys doing this, because Iran Air is out here with one A300B4-200, one A300-600R, one A310, and two A330-200s. So they have a total of 8 wide-body aircraft. Not very easy, but Mahan Air, this is not the first time they do this. Back in 2022, there were aircraft flying from Johannesburg, supposedly heading to Uzbekistan, but as they got into Iran, the transponders on these 4 A340s were shut off, and the aircraft all landed in Iran and were acquired by Iran Air as well. So I'm just trying to find the fleet size of Mahan Air here, because they're actually quite a bit bigger than Iran Air.
I taxied past Mahan Air in
Athens.
Hamburg.
Really?
Yes.
Interesting.
Hamburg or no, it wasn't Zurich, so it was Hamburg. Yeah.
So they
just a couple of weeks ago, and it's just like seeing something out of in the wild.
Yeah. I mean, I see them a lot in Dubai, for example.
No, but, and similarly, you know, the Gulf, but seeing them in Europe is
it is. But if you go to Istanbul, there's a whole interesting variety of Iranian carriers. There's Iranian Air Tours, which is a different airline. But we have actually, so Mahan Air has 7 A340-300s, 3 of my favorite plane, the A340-600, the most beautiful plane.
Can I just stop you on the A340-600? Do you know how many times a week I get sent a reel from somebody, friend of a friend or whoever, and they're like, what is this? And it's a reel showing
Lufthansa's downstairs toilets.
Lufthansa's downstairs lavatories. It blows people's minds that there's this downstairs cutout into the cargo hold where there's like 8 bathrooms to choose from. And they're like, what? And I get this from close friends who are like, have you seen this? I'm like, yes, I've seen this. I have been on these aircraft when I was 6, 7 years old.
Yeah, I hate that I wasn't the one to make this a thing, like selfishly, because...
As if it's having its moment in 2024. Yeah,
because I grew up also flying Lufthansa A340s. And I remember the first time I saw it as a kid, and I was like, what? But obviously, I didn't think to make a reel about it.
Yeah, well, that was your mistake. Always make a reel about it.
I know. I should have known better.
You should have known better.
So this is our, as we said, this is our City Line episode.
There was a headline that we wanted to bring you, though, because we're keeping a close eye on this, right? Which is that it does seem that Qatar Airways is in late stage negotiations to potentially take a stake in another airline. We know we're expecting an announcement very soon of an airline that the Qatari carrier will be investing in the Southern Africa area. It seems that they are also set potentially to take a 20% stake in Virgin Australia. We'll do a deeper dive if this deal actually comes to fruition, if we are actually going to see a stake of that size from, why am I thinking of steak now? Because I'm talking about, I'm like Australian Wagyu.
Oh, God.
If we see an Australian Wagyu steak of that size from Virgin Australia be acquired by the Qatari carrier. But I wanted to get your gut instinct reaction. When you saw this headline, what did you think?
We've said this before, but I love how it's so weird with Qantas being in one world, but their relationship being so close to Emirates and Qatar Airways just not being part of that. So they're sort of left with Virgin Australia.
And of course, Qantas always wants to keep Qatar Airways kind of away and out the picture because of competition, right? Does it want Aussies going to European summer, which there are so many now here in Europe, wants them to fly with good old Qantas, doesn't want them to fly with the Gulf carriers. So that's interesting. My gut kind of feeling when I saw this is I thought, okay, well, we know that Australia is a market that Qatar desperately want to penetrate further and increase their footprint and presence and so on. And so picking up a 20% stake in one of the largest airlines there is going to help with that.
Yeah, it will be cool to see what happens. Yeah, absolutely. So let's go into Q&A.
So I've got a question here from Tashan. I hope I pronounced his name correctly. He says, "Hi, Alex and Dan. I have been an avid listener of the podcast since day one and enjoy hearing and educating myself on improving how I fly. I usually always fly in Qatar, which I love. However, this year I took a few flights on the dreaded European airlines, and I can safely say it was even worse than expected." Oh no,
oh,
there are some great European airline business class, economy class, premium economy class out there. This shouldn't put you off. But anyway, this is not my experience. This is Tashan. So let me continue with his question. He says, "Most recently, I learned that you are both spot on with the time of a Charles de Gaulle transfer, having just completed one from San Jose en route to Heathrow. It was indeed terrible." So we have both just arrived at Charles de Gaulle today.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an interesting...
Not great.
It's an interesting place, isn't it?
Yeah.
I asked the staff today, I said, "How are the preparations going for the Olympics?" She said to me, "Not good." I said, "From an aviation point of view, from the city?" She said, "Everything." Goodness. I said, "But, you know, it seems kind of calm." She said, "They are speaking about closing the roads to the airport."
Okay, you need to say that louder.
She said, "They are speaking about closing the roads to the airport."
The roads to the airport.
Right? She said, "For cargo, catering, and so on." Basically, she went on to describe how they haven't fully decided yet what the access will be because there will be restrictions. And it just sounded like a logistical nightmare.
I wish you guys could see Alex's face because he was like also mimicking her expression, looking horrified.
By the way, how different is the vibe when we're able to see each other doing this?
I feel like it naturally,
don't get used to it, but I feel like it, I'm able to pick up on, you know, a lot of the time I'm guessing if you are about to stop or if you're taking a half breath or full breath. Anyway. Poor Tashan is listening here thinking, have these guys totally forgotten my question? Here, I'll continue. So he says, he just completed his transfer and he didn't like it. It was indeed terrible. He says, "Also, my recent Air France trip from San Jose to Paris was indeed one of the worst flights I've taken in recent times. Here is a small list of issues to include. Number one, broken screens and not being able to adjust its angle. Two, the sound kept dropping. Three,
what sound? On the
I'm assuming the in-flight entertainment sound, yeah. Three, traveled in a group of six and all six of our recline systems did not work on the return flight. So I'm assuming
in business. Six.
Well, he doesn't mention business. So yeah. I'm assuming recliner. You would hope that wasn't the case in business.
Economy.
Could be premium, could be economy. Either way, if your recline doesn't work, horrible, right? Four, they mixed up my wife's vegetarian and vegan meals. I haven't had a flight this bad in ages, and so I don't know if I'm entitled to anything. What should I do beyond making a complaint? Thank you so much.
Good question.
What's the advice? What do you think?
So unfortunately, you're not entitled to
legally
something.
Legally entitled. Yes.
But this is absolutely a case where, first of all, if you don't have Flying Blues, sign up for that, because you want to contact Air France. They should have a feedback form. And in there, you can put your Flying Blue number. It's more likely they'll offer you some, you know, goodwill gesture in the form of points. So by entering that, you'll be able to get, hopefully, a decent amount of points, depending on the cabin. If it was economy, I might expect, I don't know, 5,000 points per person. For business, definitely over 10,000 points per person as compensation. If they don't threaten them to go to court, threaten them with something, usually it works, and something will appear for you.
When we're talking, you know, threaten them, there is a line, yeah. Right? Like, hey, you sounded very mafia there.
Give them an offer they can't refuse.
He's from New York, ladies and gents. This is
how
they
get back
from
the Big Apple. So
you did fly from the Big Apple tonight. You must be completely disorientated in terms of time sense.
I'm completely messed up. So, all right. I have a good question here from Xavier. He asks, I'm enjoying the podcast with you and Alex. What are our thoughts on boarding directly through the lounge? And do we think we'll see more of this in the future?
I love it.
Yeah. But Qatar doesn't have it. So when do you ever do it?
I do it through Al Safwa.
Oh, to a car. Yeah. That's amazing. That's very nice. But I'll tell you, the Emirates lounges, when you have, like, it's a literal physical gate.
Yes.
In the lounge.
Yeah.
And you're just, you don't, like, you have a jetway, so you're not at a bus gate, but you just don't have to see anyone else.
That's great.
Besides the passengers in your cabin, obviously, but it is so nice.
You can do that at a number of outside stations as well with Emirates flights, can't you, in Emirates lounges? Am I correct in thinking you can do it at Hamburg as well? I know you can do it at Heathrow.
Yeah. So, of course, Etihad has it for a few gates.
Yeah.
It is rare. And, of course, the problem is that
logistically, it's difficult.
Yeah.
You cannot guarantee, just like I can't guarantee that the parking space outside this hotel is going to be there in the morning for the Lucid car. More on that next week. We know how difficult it is in airport operations to be able to guarantee that the same stand is available. And it's summer, right? So, for example, all these places where people are traveling to. So 2 weeks ago when I flew to Athens, you know, we landed 25 minutes early. Hooray! Ladies and gentlemen, our parking stand is not available. There's an Air Canada aircraft that just won't move. And we're there for the next 25 minutes. And I'm like, excuse me, let's go to Toronto, guys. Yeah. Come on. Yeah. We want to get off.
But you know what drives me nuts about that at JFK is that they will have a ton of empty gates. And they will still say, like when I landed on Delta, they'll go, oh, we're waiting for a plane to push back from our stand. And I look out the window and I'm like, but that gate is empty. That gate is empty. But they've assigned us this one. And now we're waiting for 30 minutes on the stand because of that. So, and of course,
just a reminder, you just chose to fly them over BA Club Suites.
Yeah. Cause I had just flown it quite a bit. And it was interesting. It was an interesting experience.
He means he got a profitable video.
Yeah. So here, let's stay in the US. I have a question from Emery. She says, I'm a few episodes into the podcast and loving it.
Welcome. Well, she's probably going to hear this in the year 2026.
Yeah, exactly. So she says, I have a question. Do you think Denver Airport has potential for international expansion? Or do you believe its traffic is mainly driven by domestic connections? So this is something I find so fascinating about the US, because to people outside the US, they don't realize how big these domestic airports are. You think of Denver and you're like, who flies there? Okay, Turkish just launched flights. You have BA, you have Lufthansa, but it's so limited. But it's actually one of the busiest airports in the world. They have so many domestic flights because it's centrally located. So you fly from the south, you can get to all of the north, you can fly from east coast to west coast and connect there. So it's the perfect spot for domestic connections, but for international connections, it doesn't make sense.
Do you know what Denver is known as? It's known as the Mile High City because the elevation is really the elevation is exactly 1 mile.
Actually, Denver has the world's second biggest airport, I think, by area after Dammam in Saudi Arabia.
Look at these fun facts on Air Express. Yeah. Guys, he's not reading it. He's facing me.
Yeah, Denver and Dammam. I'm pretty sure that's correct. So, and of course, Denver, there are many like interesting conspiracy theories and stories about Denver Airport because it's built on some historical site, which unfortunately I'm not too familiar with. But as in terms of international connections, this is why we see foreign hubs on the US coasts, of course. So we have Miami in the south, or New York, Boston, Philadelphia, Charlotte. And then the main other hubs are Seattle, LA, San Francisco. That's how it works, and that's most logical. So I don't think we will see much of a change, especially in terms of United launching more international service.
Can I finish with the 5 Denver airport conspiracy theories?
Okay, good way to finish.
Okay, so the first conspiracy theory is that it was built by the New World Order. So many Denver airport conspiracy theories revolve around who was originally behind the construction, with one of the most persistent rumors being that it was built by the New World Order with ties to the Nazis.
Oh.
And it doesn't help that the airport's dedication marker credits an organization called the New World Airport Commission for building it. Have you seen this?
I've been to Denver, but I haven't seen that sculpture. So
there's a giant blue horse sculpture. Apparently that is kind of like a signal, a nod to the 4 horsemen of the apocalypse, known locally as Blucifer. The blue Mustang by an artist has been blah, 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 blah. Let's see. It says that they point to the horse's glowing red eyes as a nod to the 4 horsemen in the apocalypse. When actually it's just red LED floodlights, something to do with the artist's decision.
Is this all part of the first conspiracy theory?
No, that's the second. The third part is that the Denver airport contains the Illuminati headquarters.
I've heard this one. Yeah. What a spot.
Likely stemmed from a time capsule that was buried on the ground, set to be reopened in 2094. It bears symbols related to the Freemasons, which has ties to the Illuminati, a secret society that dates back to the 18th century Europe. According to Nat Geo, the group was known for its desire to reshape society by any means necessary, and this is why they say that it's the kind of HQ of Illuminati. They also say that there are underground tunnels with secret bunkers under Denver.
Familiar.
Yeah, and there's a large network of underground tunnels, a train that runs through between the concourses. Apparently, some believe that their true nature is far more of a conspiracy nature, and that they're even hiding, quote, lizard people or aliens, and that they also serve as a safe place for the world's elite during the apocalypse. The official Denver tourism website, Dan, says that the tunnels lead directly to NORAD, the North American Aerospace Defense Command Center, which is a special base 90 miles south of Colorado Springs that basically, I guess, they'll assemble when the world ends. And that the artwork around Denver Airport gives us clues about the end of the world, because apparently there are many strange art pieces scattered through. My God, we've got to go.
Yeah, let's go. Next trip. And let's find out if it's true.
Who mentioned the conspiracy side of this? The person who asked the question?
No,
you mentioned
did.
It in the answer. Because I had no idea.
Oh, it's really famous. It's
wow,
a big
this
thing.
Is a thing. Other
even,
conspiracies.
Even, let's say, aviation civilians, people who know nothing, will come up to me, like friends or family members of friends, but in the US, have you been to Denver Airport? I heard there's quite some things going on there. So
yeah, I don't know who your friends are.
I said,
why do they sound like the professor in The Simpsons?
Okay.
Wow. Well, that's interesting. Oh, well, look, maybe we'll take Lufthansa CityLine there. But regardless, let's quickly round up and regroup to where we are now. So we're in Paris. We've got plenty happening, and we will both be present at All Being Well tomorrow evening, that we will come to you with all of the tea, all of the lowdown this time next week, so that we can tell you, you know, what was happening here. It's Fashion Week, but it's Fashion Week that meets aviation. And there is this expectation that Riyadh Air is going to deliver. Tony Douglas, the CEO, is a chief executive who has joined us on an episode of On Air. If you scroll back in your podcast
episode
feed. Episode 10, there we go. And was it that early on? Wow. And he revealed himself on the podcast that they were going to have something that wasn't uniform, that was fashion and blah, blah, blah. So we shall see if all of this lives up to the hype. And there's some other kind of lucid dreaming ideas around all of this as well. More on that next week.
Yeah. So thanks for joining us so much. We'll see you next Wednesday on air. Bye-bye.
See you later.